You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
The U.S. and China try to warm up to each other a little. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation, or APEC, summit continues today near San Francisco. President Joe Biden and Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke positively about their meeting on the sidelines of that summit yesterday, agreeing to curb fentanyl production and resume communication between the two countries' militaries. But on the thorniest issues, no major breakthroughs. That includes trade. The Trump-era tariffs on Chinese imports to the U.S., for example, are still very much in place. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has that.
Bought anything from a big box store lately? Then chances are you got something made in China and covered by the tariffs first put in place by former President Donald Trump and continued under President Joe Biden. Henrietta Trays, managing partner at Veda Partners, says tariffs are levied on all kinds of Chinese imports.
Industrial inputs, consumer electronics, all your back-to-school supplies, and your frozen shrimp.
Then there are the steel and aluminum tariffs. Trays says altogether, tariffs cover around $370 billion worth of Chinese imports. The tariffs range from 7.5 to 25%. Trays says they cost U.S. consumers about $51 billion per year, and they aren't going away anytime soon.
Wherever your expectations are, lower them. The likelihood of any tariffs coming off is almost unthinkable.
Trays says that's because China hasn't backed away from the policies that led to the tariffs in the first place. Things like intellectual property theft and forcing U.S. companies wanting to do business in China to hand over their latest research. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The U.S. Postal Service this week announced a $6.5 billion net loss for the fiscal year ending September 30th. Not a good sign for Postmaster Louis DeJoy's controversial push to make the Postal Service profitable. Controversial because it is a contentious question as to whether a government service should be run like a business. But that is the current plan, and Marketplace's Savannah Marr checked in on the effort.
2023 was supposed to be the year the USPS broke even, according to DeJoy's austerity plan. But James O'Rourke, a professor of management at Notre Dame, says this year's net loss was predictable.
The only surprise is that the figure was that small.
O'Rourke says the USPS is facing a tough business environment. Even after the 2022 Postal Service Reform Act slashed its retiree benefit costs.
It was designed to take care of a great deal. It didn't take care of everything.
Postmaster DeJoy blamed higher operating costs and a decline in first-class mail volumes for the agency's troubles. To boost revenue, the USPS needs to diversify, says Postal Service historian Christopher Shaw.
One opportunity it clearly has is to partner with government agencies to offer services at post offices.
Like hunting and fishing license sales, for example. But Shaw points out the USPS is a service that historically has almost never turned a profit. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
90% of avocados in the U.S. are imported from Mexico. Each year, the U.S. brings in 2 billion pounds of them. 20 years ago, it was just 55 million. Many pass through Laredo, Texas. But moving avocados from the farms of Michoacán to the supermarkets of the Midwest and beyond has to be done cold. Marketplace's Elizabeth Troval has more on this specialized refrigerated supply chain that is expanding rapidly.
It's 42 degrees inside this nearly 300,000-square-foot Mission Produce distribution facility in Laredo, Texas. From here, pallets stocked with millions of avocados from Michoacán and Jalisco will make their way to distribution centers across the U.S.
So this is our bagging operation. This is where we bag product.
Mission Produce Director of Operations Frank Briseño shows me a machine that pops 4 avocados into green netted bags like the ones you'd see in the supermarket. This new cold storage facility is the hub for Mission Produce.
Everything that goes to our other distribution centers that comes from Mexico basically flows through here.
Which is why the company invested $50 million to build this cold storage facility, which opened 2 years ago.
If at any point in the supply chain, the cold chain is broken, then that shelf life of that fruit is diminished greatly. From the point that we harvest to when we deliver it to our packing houses, it's under cold storage.
To do that, they use a lot of insulation and these shiny silver machines on the ceiling.
It is just a giant AC unit on steroids.
Food service and medical supply companies today are hungry for cold chain storage facilities like this, says Brian Day, an analyst with logistics group Gartner.
North America cold chain market is looking at roughly like a 15 to 16% growth rate.
Texas currently makes up about half of new cold chain storage construction in the U.S. At the Port of Laredo, known mostly for moving industrial products, Port Director Alberto Flores says lately he's seen more produce coming through.
For the longest time, we were between 6 and 7% of our entire cargo was agriculture. Now it's closer to 10.
And the port has invested in the cold chain, too. It opened a new refrigerated inspection facility outside one of its border bridges earlier this year. I'm Elizabeth Troval for Marketplace.
A day in the life of a New York City street vendor. That and the day's economic news coming up on Marketplace in the Afternoon with Kai Rizdahl. Check it out on public radio, marketplace.org, or on podcast 2. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.